Welcome back to another episode of Comrades, the weekly pod, well, almost weekly podcast about the Americans, the drama on FX starring Kerry Russell and Matthew Rhys. I am Scott Malkus. With me, as always, my co-host, Jeff Marsick. Jeff and I were unavailable to record last week. Life got crazy. Isn't that crazy? Crazy. I'll say crazy one more time. And so we're gonna find a way to talk about two episodes in 1 hour. Because I'm on my lunch break and we're doing that's the way we roll here at Comrades. Scott takes a lunch break and does a podcast.
This is like commando podcast.
That's right.
Like, try to find an hour that we can pull this off.
Yes. But as I was saying to Jeff before we started recording, fortunately the episode that we missed that we would have recorded about last week, USEP was what it was called. That episode was almost like a mission of the week type episode. There was not a lot of, so I didn't feel like there's too much substance to that episode. It felt very, wouldn't you agree, Jeff? It just felt like, oh, all of a sudden we bring in some new character named Annalise. Has she ever been on the show before?
No.
Okay, so we bring in this character we've never talked about before. We've got this mission of this guy, this creepy guy named Yusuf, and you know, that was the main plot. That was the A plot of the story, and the rest of it was kind of just background, which was the background stuff was more important, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I agree. When they brought Annalise in, look, I get that they've got a network of people and all other stuff, but when they brought her in, it just seemed to be, it was really convenient. It was, we need another character. So there's this Annalise girl that we've not heard of or seen in two seasons, and
I feel like the sole purpose of Annalise in this episode was for was so that Philip could have a moment where he says, I don't want you to go in and do this mission to say to Elizabeth, and to have that big moment scene at the end where at the end of the episode and Annalise freaks out because she's had sex with Yusuf. She takes it as far as she thinks she has to take it, and she freaks out at the end, and she goes off and throws a glass, and he says along the line, basically, don't you think it hurts me every time I see a woman I love being intimate with another man? And that whole statement to me was like, is this relationship with Annalise, is he supposedly telling her that he loves her too? I don't know. I took the
double entendre. This was the quote because I wrote it down, because when he said it, I was like, he's talking about more than just her. And he said, you don't think it kills me to watch the one I love sacrifice herself like that, give herself to another man, even if it is for a cause bigger than either of us. It's not something I take lightly, ever. And it was just so, again, it was just one of those things where it was so out of place, I guess, in the moment that I thought that there was a bigger ramification there.
Well, it did. I thought there would be bigger ramifications. I thought that at least in this following episode, there were no ramifications of Annalise. There was no discussion of what transpired in that episode. You know, I mean, all they did was kind of set up. Maybe they'll come back to it. I don't know. But all of it was, you know, okay, we know that there's a war going on in Afghanistan, and you know the rebels are being armed, and you know, and we know where that's going to lead in 20 years. But other than that, you know, other than it felt feeling almost self-knowing, is that the right word? Where you
self-aware?
You know, it's like, and that hindsight 2020 thing. It's like, you know, it's 2014, and we're writing about something that happens in 1980, and we know the ramifications of what's going to happen because of this meeting. You know.
Right.
It felt, I don't want to say contrived, but it just felt like, hey, we know what's going to, I'm not describing it very well, Jeff, and I'm very,
well,
do you understand what I'm saying? It's like when you watch something like, you know, when somebody's making fun of an era and, you know, it's like, hey, we can do this thing with a fax machine, da, 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 and they have this big bulky fax machine and we all go, look at how big that, it's like that kind of a self-awareness,
right.
You know?
Right. Well, the other problem I had with it was that, Yusuf was, you know, you got to be careful about this guy because he's ISI, which is the Pakistani, basically their CIA. So, you know, Philip warns Elizabeth in the beginning, no, you just don't walk into a bar and pick this guy up. Like, he's going to read you from a mile away. Let's use Annalise. And what did Annalise do? Annalise basically walked into a party and picked him up from a mile away.
And he was not dangerous at all. He was kind of a flunky. He didn't know anything. Exactly. The information that they got was wrong. He was a number two man who never got information.
Right.
So
it needed it was a long con. I mean, that's something that's a long con. You needed that to be tracked out, you know?
Yeah.
And they're setting him up, you know, killing what was his boss, Javi. Killing Javi so that this guy, this number two, Yusef, so he moves up and becomes the number one. It reminded me of Homeland. Of this last season, when they did the same
after one,
and you made out. Trust me. So they did this kind of the same thing. There was a guy that they want to elevate up in the ranks of the Iranian National Guard. So if they basically take one guy out, this guy will propel himself up. That was a long con. They didn't do that in an episode. It took several episodes to get that sorted out. So. I think last week's episode was the Yusef episode was a little, it was a little contrived for me. I mean, there were other things in the episode, but that part, that whole Annalise part, it just felt off.
Yeah, that part, and that was the focus of the episode. When really, I would have rather seen, because elsewhere in the episode, Larrick returns from South America and decides he's going to seek revenge for his friends who got killed in that mission. You know, the people Philip and Elizabeth killed people when they were into that secret camp. And so Larrick's decided to go rogue himself and he's going to take out, you know, he's going to prove how badass he is. And we're realizing this guy is a dangerous. I'm the more I watch Lee Ferguson and the more this character's on screen, the more I don't want him to die. The more I want him to be this guy that's always roaming in the background, that is this dangerous character that's hunting them, you know? And as we see, you know, and we see how we see his SEAL like capabilities when he.
Yep.
Now, this is the thing is like we spent all that time with Yusef. I would have loved to see more of Larrick getting in the guise of how he's going to go in there. And he goes into the phone company and gets, you know, a warrant. He has a warrant to get phone numbers to figure out where the guy in the basement with all the telephones, the Russian dude, he figures out who that guy is. I would have liked to have seen more of that. I thought that was kind of fascinating, that this guy's brain operates in a way that he knows how to get a warrant. He knows who to talk to get these phone numbers, and he knows how to get into a phone box and to figure out. And then he gets in. So that stuff to me was like, I want to see that because I've seen, you know, Philip and Elizabeth do their undercover agent thing so much. Let's take a time out to see this nasty guy. It would have been cool, you know? And it would have been like, you know, again, he's such an interesting and thrilling character. It reminds me of like when they introduced Ben on Lost, and it was like, it was almost a throwaway character, but you put an actor in that part who is so good that you can't stop watching him. And that's what they've done with Lee Ferguson. And like, and Lee Ferguson, I've seen, you know, if you've ever seen him in other roles, he like when he goes in and presents that warrant to the phone lady and he's so friendly and nice and, right. And he plays that part so well. He can be just the nice guy so well. And then he becomes just, you know, dead inside and super evil. And I just love it. And it's like, oh, I want to keep watching this guy. Keep bringing him back, you know?
Yeah.
And
well, I mean, how terrifying was it that he was in that family's
house? Oh my gosh, the family's still there. I was freaking out. You know, that was the best. I mean, he's in the house and he's just kind of walking through, and that little girl goes, "Oh, here it is," and she turns around and he's gone. And it's like, oh, I mean, that scene was so well shot and so scary, and yet it also told you so much about how awesome of a SEAL he is. He is so good. He can be in somebody's house walking around. That makes me afraid in my own house now, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I thought the same thing. I was like, oh my Lord, I'm going to lock all the doors and windows while I'm in my own house.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because he could probably get in. And see, the thing that killed, now, so he goes in the basement and he finds all those wires. Now, are we talking, I was trying to figure this out because I watched this a second time because my DVR did not record the first time. Thank you. DirecTV.
Thanks, DirecTV.
So now, were the Russians, are they tapping into those people's lines, or are they a part of it? I couldn't figure that out.
That was my read, is that they're basically jacking off of those lines. So when he follows those lines go right to the house, And then when he's, you know, he goes down in the basement and he tracks the line, he's just like, well, this isn't going to this house. That line's, and he looks out the window and sees a light on the other side. So it's just like, you know, it's like those scenes in the Wire, the kids in Baltimore using all the extension cords and stealing electricity off the grid.
So he's basically stealing the phone line from these people.
Yeah, which is great because then that keeps them off the grid. There's not a phone number, you know, attached there, and they're completely, they're just like little leeches, basically.
Yeah, you'd think people would kind of look at their phone bills on occasion.
Yeah.
How does that work? Well, I mean, I guess
that's a good point.
Well, I guess they're just outgoing calls, so as long as they're not long distance, I guess you don't really.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess, you know, I don't even look at my phone bill.
Nobody does. Yeah, exactly.
Well, now, but back then you did. Because you got...
Only if it was outrageous. I mean, if you saw that if this guy's only making a couple phone calls here and there, and we see how long those phone calls are. They're just long enough to...
Yeah.
To, you know, make a pitch, like, couple seconds. You know,
your right.
phone bill
You're
goes
right.
up like a dollar.
You're Unless not he's calling Russia. I was like, well, who called Russia? It cost me $40!
Right.
That's right. Yeah. Remember those days when you had to pay huge amounts for them? For your phone bill? I remember those days.
Oh, yeah.
In college. I went to a party of this girl I didn't like, and I was so mad at her that I called North Carolina from her phone, and I spoke on the phone for about an hour and a half to North Carolina.
Nice.
On her phone. And her bill would have come back, and it would have been like, you know, $50 more than usual, which is a lot of money when you're in college. Sorry, you know who you are.
We won't name names, but... You know who you are.
I apologize. Elsewhere in Yusuf, the only other, well, like I said, like I was talking about that episode, the stuff that was good in Yusuf was the background stuff. There was a scene where Olag and his girlfriend, can't remember her name. Tell me her name.
Nina.
Yes, they're in bed together, and see.
And the other guy's name, the guy that they killed, that's Vlad.
Just so Vlad, you know. I have it right here. See, it's still on my computer from last week or 2 weeks ago. Vlad. So there was this. Now, see, because my DVR didn't record everything, at first I thought there must have been a previous scene, but it's not. They just wake up in bed together, and she asks this random question: "Do you wish you were back in Russia?" And I thought that was a really a nice, interesting scene reveal. Well, it was revealing in two ways. It was revealing why he's in America, and he really is a patriot to his country. But he's also an idealist, which is what I really liked. He's like, if America gets stealth, then we need to have stealth because there needs to be a balance. And if there's not a balance, then somebody loses. And it's not just that Russia loses; it's the whole world loses. And I thought that was really interesting. That he is kind of, you know, he's thinking about the bigger picture than just Mother Russia and the United States. He's thinking about the whole world, which is that's kind of cool. Would you agree?
I think you might have said that entire minute like without breathing. No. I
only got an hour, Jeff. You only got an hour.
No, absolutely. It's. There's another dimension to him and what he and you know his cause that he's fighting for. It's not just, you know, he's not just drinking the Kool-Aid because it's, you know, it's red Kool-Aid. He's actually believes the stuff that he's, you know, that he's saying.
And and it leads me to believe that he's, you know, it's interesting because he is like, you know, he's the son of wealth. We know that. So right. You would think that he would fall in line, but he doesn't want to fall in line. He's, you know, he's like a 60s child who revolting against his parents, and his way of doing that is making sure that the world is safe instead of Mother Russia. And then the other part of that scene, which is great, is he makes, you know, he's talking about, they had that great little conversation about the Lenin pins. And she talks about her youth, and they compare their upbringings, whereas he had a cottage that his parents always went to, and she went to you know, Russian kid camp, I guess is what you would call it, or Soviet kids camp, or Soviet summer camp, where all kids get to wear nice little Lenin pins.
Right.
And it was a really sweet little thing of her recalling youth. And that's, again, I think we talk about this a lot, but what I really like about, you know, they're supposed to be our enemies. We're watching the show, and they're the enemies, and yet, you're rooting for them as much as you are, you know, they're all pawns. And that's, I think, but one of the things that I've been getting out of this season, especially, is that everybody in the show is just a pawn to someone else. What I was saying is like, everybody in the show is a pawn. And in this past week's episode, even Arkady, even he said that, where he goes to talks to Oleg, and he basically says, you know, even I can't protect Nina. And I, you know, if something happens, it goes wrong, all of our heads are rolling. You know, I think, you know, everybody in this show answers to someone else. Even Gad answers to someone else. And, right. And I think that's, you know, that's a cool thing that they've been able to establish, is really, really makes the more of a character driven show than a plot driven show. You know, it's not,
yep.
It's not so much about the US versus the Soviets. It's about these characters, and they're all kind of, they're fighting the same battle, but on different sides. Hey, well, that's a nice little thing. Wow. I should be a writer. But I liked that at the end of that scene with the Oleg and Nina, is that he says, you are capable of doing anything. And she says, I know, that's what scares me. Or that's what she's afraid of. And that's just a very telling note about her character, because I think, you know, in the coming weeks, I wonder what's going to happen. I mean, especially the preview for this week's episode, where it seems like they're going to put the hard press on, a full court press. I'm sorry to mix metaphoring my basketball. Yeah. They're going to put a full court press on to stand, to defect, or to turn. I'm wondering what Nina will do. I'm really interested in that.
She's a tough one to read, because you know, for weeks now, you and I have said, well, she definitely has feelings for Stan, and now when I see her with Oleg, it's like, no, she's totally into him, and Stan's just kind of like going to be her pawn. And man, I don't know.
I think Nina's in it for herself. I think she is. She, as much as anybody, understands that it's a game, and you have to do what you have to do to survive. And that's kind of what, you know, that's kind of what happens to Annalise, actually. She has to do what she does for the mission, for the job.
And just to skip ahead a little bit, so on this week's episode, what was this week's episode called? Yusef was last week.
Stealth.
So this week, it was really funny, because all of a sudden there's like a dour kind of attitude towards Nina in the or with regard to Nina in the Russians in the Russian headquarters, because basically if she can't pull this mission off, she's going to get sent back to Russia, and she's going to have to deal with, you know, the fact that she betrayed her country, gave secrets to Stan. All of a sudden, and it was really cool, because when I'm watching this, I was like, holy cow. You know, it's like we've been, for so long, we've just kind of been under this, just under the assumption that Nina's working for the Russians, and yet she's with Stan, and there's like no ramifications. There's no, there's no stakes. Right. Well, oh, guess what? Yeah, there are stakes. You just kind of forgot about it.
Right.
I thought it was really cool that we brought those stakes back into play, and she's not on unlimited time. She's on borrowed time, and she's got a...
herself. Yeah, they want. Yeah, because, I'm glad you brought that up, because the stakes are, you know, it's a mad race for power and information, and sometimes I don't feel like that. You know, the pressing, it's as pressing. You know, obviously espionage is a slow burn. It's a slow game that you have to try and get information. Yet we're in an arms race. You know, we're trying to get stealth information. We're trying to find out about the internet. It's basically like the Manhattan Project all over again. You know, when they were trying to get the nuclear bomb, first one to that bomb is going to, you know, be a world power. Well, this is the same thing. And sometimes you're right. You don't really feel that pressure that they're supposedly under. And I like that they did introduce that, because now it's like, okay, that's going to ratchet up things for the last, there's only two more episodes left. So we'll see what happens in the next couple episodes. So elsewhere, and on Yusuf, the only other interesting thing two other interesting things, I shouldn't say the only, Paige wants to go to become a camp counselor, and Elizabeth finds her trying to forge documents so that she can become a camp counselor at a church.
Okay, I just had to bring up a point, because when I saw Elizabeth goes walking into Paige's room, which is horribly wallpapered, by the way. Have you ever seen the wallpaper that's on that room?
That's typical ages, man.
Right, but it's god awful. So she goes in there and she goes to clean out the trash. And what does she find in the trash? She finds this piece of paper where Paige was practicing forging her mom's signature. Dude, serious flashbacks to third grade. Same thing happened to me. I had gotten a detention or something, or something had come home. I think it was a detention. And I remember it distinctly, because I was downstairs watching Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Uh-huh. And my stepmom had gone through my room in my $6 million man steel garbage can, just like Paige's. And there they were. The pieces of paper.
Garbage can.
What's that?
You left it in the garbage can?
I I was an idiot. That was my pre spy days. Yes.
See, my only time I got caught to having to do something like that was that you'll love this one. It was in sixth grade. I was angry at the art teacher, so I flipped him off, and he caught me. He has back to me, and I was flipping him off, and he turned around just as I was flipping him off. I was caught. Nice. Everybody in class saw me, so he made me write a note that I flipped off so and so, and then he made me take it home. He wasn't too smart because I wrote it in pencil, so I rewrote that. I rewrote the notes as I was talking in class. And then, now, he may have talked to my parents after this. I don't know. But my parents never brought it up again. But I rewrote it as like I was talking in class, took it home, had my mom and dad sign it, went back to school, re-raised it. I flipped off the teacher, turned that paper. Man, I was a stealth guy in sixth grade. Woo!
Nice.
Yeah. I think that's any note my kids bring home, I'm going to make them write it in pen.
Yeah, no doubt.
Although they could use erasable pen, because those were hip in the 80s too. Right? Then we bring it
to it's funny because the other thing that I have a personal relationship with that rings personal to me is Paige is wanting to go to this, you know, be a part of this youth group,
yep.
And be involved in the church and stuff. So when I was in, being Lutheran, when I was in sixth grade, I started taking, the
confirmation classes.
Yes, that's it. I keep getting tripped up with communion. I know it wasn't communion because that's Catholic. And anyway, so I was taking the classes in sixth grade. I took the classes in seventh grade. Well, sixth grade was like the optional. You didn't have to take it, but you had to take it in like seventh and eighth.
But you're an overachiever, so you decided to take additional classes, yeah. Didn't you?
Well, or my parents were anyway. So, and they had been at this church in North Olmsted since I was like before I was a baby. And the last thing, we had a new pastor. I'm in my last year of doing this. I'm like 3 months away from getting confirmed, and we get a new pastor. And this new pastor comes in, and he's younger than the old pastor, and he comes in, and he's like, here's what we're going to do. Instead of the regular curriculum, everybody has to go away on a retreat for 2 weeks. And I was like, first of all, I'm like, oh, no, a retreat, really? My dad took umbrage with that really hard. Now, my dad was older when he had me. He was born in the late teens.
Oh,
so
wow.
He was there during the rise of, yeah. So he was alive during the rise of the Hitler Youth and all this other stuff. And wow. My dad said, no, you do not take a child away from their parents and go off to a religious camp. And this was 86, you know, or wow. 82, 83.
So you could relate to this.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. My parents were dead set. So, what happened? My dad walks in and he says to the pastor, he's not going on this retreat. That's not going to happen. Have him write a book report or something. Like, he just starts like throwing all this stuff. I'm like, Dad, I don't know if you're helping or hindering me here.
Write a book report about the Bible, Jeff.
Yeah, pretty much. And the pastor said, no, this is how it is. My dad said, we've been coming here for like 20 years. And is this how you want it? Is this how you, we'll walk away from the church right now. And the pastor stood his ground. My dad stood his ground and never went back to that church.
Wow.
Yep.
Holy cow.
So yeah, I can relate.
Wow. The more I learn about your life, the more I say, wow. Jeff grew up with the great Santini, man. Jeez Louise. There's a book there, pal.
Yeah, I know. My wife keeps telling me there is.
Imagine how much weight will lift off you when you write that.
I know.
And then we can turn it into a best-selling Pat Conroy-type movie with the Barbara Streisand can direct.
Hey, I probably need to write it because it'll save me a lot of my therapist bills.
Oh, there you go. But talking to me doesn't help you, Jeff. Damn. Sorry. I thought I was there for you. Okay, so that the big thing about that, the end of the other big thing of this episode was that I love these little meetings between between Frank and Arcady now. Those are great. I hope they don't.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want them to happen all the time like they do outside of outside of Frank's office house. It's snowing so heavily that you have to have an umbrella. But but there's two things that happened that I liked with Stan. First of all, Frank comes back to work and Stan's got this whole board set up where he's trying to trace the why the people died, right?
Yep.
And this is a huge reveal. And Frank comes into the office and Stan's like, good to see you, sir. And he goes to shake his hand and Frank just walks right by him. He's like, you're the reason I almost got fired, you jerk. And so I was like, oh, that was a very telling moment. But then they went back to business. And then, of course, Frank was, you know, he's just so much smarter. And he's like, would you take your briefcase on a vacation? And he's like, no. And then Frank figures out that these guys were.
That annoyed me.
It annoyed you? Why?
Because I wanted Stan to do that. Stan should have picked up on
it. But see, I like that about that Stan isn't super agent guy all the time. I like that Frank has a little bit more knowledge than Stan. And that's the way it should be, so that Stan can still be learning. And that's why I liked it, is because Frank, you know, Frank knows about drug cartels. Frank knows about this. You know, and Stan's like kind of, you know, he's just looking on the surface. And Frank's judgment is kind of, I mean, Frank is digging deep. Don't get me wrong. I mean, look at all that he's figured out.
Right.
And sometimes you need that extra person to come in and just kind of get another view of it. And that's what, you know, and so then then Stan goes to visit the boy. He goes to visit, is it Jeremy?
Jared.
And that scene was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Jared, the kid playing Jared, was awesome. His emotion in that scene, trying to restrain from crying and scream and anger, was so good. And Noah Emmerich was so good in that scene as well, where he's like, you know, trying to control the situation and being sympathetic to this boy. I love when Stan is like this, where he's professional, but he is such a good, he's a good human. That's what you see in the scene. He's not trying to torment this boy. He's just like, you know, that whole bit about the secrets. My favorite part is like the boy goes, my sister was 14 years old. Did she have secrets? And Stan says, probably, but that's okay. Right. And it's like, right. I just love that because it's so true. Everybody has secrets. And he's like, it's okay that we had secrets. And it's okay that your parents kept things from you because they're human. And that's what we do. You can't know everything about everybody. And I love that. I love that scene was so great. And then he pulls out the sketch artist drawings of Philip and Elizabeth, who, you know, and he goes, have you ever seen these people before? Which was great. That was awesome. That was a great setup. So, it was all the minor things in this episode, and of course, elsewhere in the episode, Larrick kills our Russian dude in the basement. Man, I'm just jumping all over the place. I'm sorry. Larrick kills the Russian dude in the basement with the phones, and then he is able to tap into the wires. And who does he call, Jeff? Who does he call? Not Goose.
Oh, he calls Kate.
He calls Kate. Yes, he calls Kate, which leads into the next episode. Hey, how about that for a segue? Dun-dun-dun, that's this week's
segue. All right, but before you segue, that
was this week's segue of the week. But I'm sorry.
Okay, no. I just wanted to bring up two points. One was you had mentioned about Gad and Arcady meeting outside Gad's home. And when they kind of meet, you know, Arcady says, I just want to let you know that my side has agreed to accept the DC police's statement as to why Vlad was killed, blah, blah, blah. And Gad just kind of looks at me, he's like, so, is that the only reason why you came out here on this snowy day, or did you really just want to check out and see where I live?
Yeah.
Which I thought was a great line. And then just something I thought was funny was later on with, Nina and Stan, and Stan comes in and tells Nina he's got to get the stealth tech, blah, blah, blah. And then he tells her Sandra's having an affair.
Right.
And he's like, and her response is, well, so are you. But before that, she's like, all right, she's like, there's something wrong. Can you tell me? He's like, well, I shouldn't be telling you this. No, but you just told her about the stealth tech, but you shouldn't be telling her about your wife?
Yeah, I know. Well, because that's personal. It's business and personal. You know?
Oh, okay.
You know, sleeping with her, that's business, you know? He's trying to convince her that he loves her so they can get her to defect and get information from her. Oh, okay, I'm just stretching. I don't know. Stan is in a spiral, and I just poor guy. Poor guy. And his son is nowhere to be found. Never on screen is his son.
And you know, Paige actually brought up a good point, too, when she gets yelled at for trying
she was awesome.
She, you know, counterfeit her name. She brings up a good point. She goes, wait, wait, wait. Henry goes.
He breaks into the neighbor's
somebody
house.
Else's house, and you guys don't do anything. I'm trying to go to church.
I'm trying to become a better person, and I'm looking at fault here. Yeah, she's great. She's great. And that leads into this week's episode as well, in which Elizabeth realizes that Paige has something she believes in, and she believes in something. And so it's good to promote that, you know.
Well, like she says, she's starting to see herself and her daughter.
Right. That's like, what I was trying to say. And I didn't say it at all.
Not even close.
Nope. Not at all. In my head, I was like, that's what I said. Oh, no, I didn't. I'm sorry.
Well, it's because now it's changed a little bit. Her mission is, hey, some people from my church want to go and protest these nuclear weapons at the Air Force base. Oh, okay. Well, that's fine then.
Yeah. Well, nobody wants nukes, man.
But if you don't, you know, but if it's gonna be some Bible stuff, yeah, forget that. But
well, maybe she'll soften on that. I hope so, because I liked that Philip, even though he probably philosophically doesn't agree with the, obviously we know he doesn't agree with what they're with the Christian, you know, what they're preaching at the church. They're obviously preaching. I don't want to make it sound like, oh, they're preaching is crap. But no, what he doesn't believe in Christianity, but he's still open to letting Paige figure that out for herself. Much in the same way that, and maybe that's what one of the things that came out in this week's episode that I didn't put two and two together, but much in the same way that Elizabeth never revealed that the parents were Russian spies to Jared. Jared. Yeah. God, I'm going to have to write that down now, too. Writing it down. Much that she didn't reveal it to Jared because he was, you know, an innocent in this game. Maybe that's, you know, maybe that's what Philip is trying to convince her of, is like, hey, look, you didn't tell them that he was Russian spies. You didn't want to ruin his vision. You're letting him become his own person in this country. We got to let our kids do that too, even if they take us away and throw us in prison, you know?
Right.
But we'll see. I mean, because as we found out in this week's episode, what we found out in this week's episode, this current episode, is that Kate and Jared have a relationship of some sort.
Yeah, that was curious.
That was a big shock. Now we can officially segue into this episode, Stealth. This week's episode of Americans is actually called Stealth. It was written by Joshua Brandon, directed by Gregory Holden. And now I'm moving on. So, anyway, what we found out is like Philip and Elizabeth find out that the FBI have visited the boy and Jared. Got it written down. And so Elizabeth's like, holy crap. We got to find out what he said. And Philip's like, well, what if they're watching the house? He's like, oh, I'm a better agent than that. Come on, give me some credit. So Elizabeth does go and visit Jared, and Jared just kind of lives. It's like, the FBI guy was asking a bunch of questions about my parents, yada, yada, yada. And Elizabeth's not really 100% convinced that he's being straight with her.
Now, how that scene was shot, there's a lot of like low camera angles because he had an orange. And he's doing a lot of fumbling with the orange. When he goes to the counter, he stands there, he's rolling the orange. He's doing a lot of fidgeting.
Yes, exactly.
And it made me think of the picture that Stan showed, because I didn't go back and watch the episode. But you would watch it recent.
Yeah,
recent.
Well, you know, the one thing that I thought of was the glasses. The glasses were the only thing similar. Would have been the only thing similar because she in the drawing she has that kind of bouffant 80s hairdo that the only character I remember Hill Street Blues and the woman that played the captain's wife, and she always had that kind of permed hair and really long and shoulder length and a kind of
Barbara
something. She was Stephen Bochco's wife, I think. Now I gotta look it up. Anyway, that was that hairdo, and the glasses I think were similar, so that's why I think that he may have been questioning, going, is this the same? I don't know. And he was definitely fidgeting, and it made me believe that. Well, it certainly made me believe that he was holding out for the FBI or something.
Yeah, I think there was just how that was shot. It just made me think that he knew. Veronica Hamill.
No, not Veronica Hamill. Although she is, that's who it's Barbara Bossett. She played Faye Ferrillo.
Oh, okay.
And she's still Stephen Bochco's wife.
Well, there you go. So.
Sorry. This is a little tangent. I loved her character because she was so whiny in that show, and she always had a problem. Anyway, I like her.
I love Veronica Hamill because she was hot.
Well, yes, that too. Moving on.
Yeah. So there was definitely something a little off about.
So she follows him, and he goes riding on his bike in the middle of winter, which of course that would be a cue for me. Now, what about the family he's staying with? Where are they at?
Latchkey kid, man.
Already, he's a latchkey kid for, you know, for the foster family. They're like, okay, here's your key. Don't worry about it. Nobody's chasing you. Your parents are dead. I'm sure you're doing fine. But she follows him to a diner, watching, and who's there to meet him at the diner?
Kate.
Kate. Now, what is that all about?
And especially since later on, something that Elizabeth brings up is that Kate just showed up, goes in a diner. Kate's looking like Kate. Kate didn't bother to put on a disguise. Nothing. She just shows up as is.
Kate is Kate. Boy. I'm going to miss Kate. I kind of liked Kate.
And if you're wondering why.
Oh, come on. If they've watched the episode, they know what we're talking about. Kate dies in this episode.
At the hands of Larrick.
But where was she when they went to her apartment?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know. I thought she was going to be in the refrigerator.
Oh, that would have been great.
There was something how it was shot when Kerry Russell goes into the kitchen. You see the refrigerator there. I was like, Larrick just bundled her up and shoved her in the fridge.
Yeah,
But that would raise too many questions because there's a body and then an investigation.
He took her.
Yeah.
That's crazy. She's going to show up on a doorstep somewhere.
But there were some cool things. There were a lot of cool things in there. Like, when Kate first goes to Kate comes into her house and she's there for a couple seconds and she realizes there's just something. There's a vibe that's just slightly off.
No, well,
so she goes room to room, goes to the bathroom, it locks it, pulls her, her little
all the toilet paper.
Gun out. And then she takes all the toilet paper off. And you're like, what is she going to
do? Yeah, that was a nice reveal. That was a good reveal.
And then it turns out that she wrote the message on the inside of the toilet roll, which was, that was cool.
Yeah, that was really cool. I really liked that.
Again, it's just a little spycraft.
And Elizabeth knew to look for that, which was really, she knew to look for it because the toilet seat was up. That's right. She left the toilet seat up as an indication that the guy was in there. Kate, I'm going to miss her. She was pretty tough, man. She would not give up anything. She was true to the cause, man.
Well, she was coming on too. Like last episode, where Philip always kind of got his dander up around her, and then she was like, "I'm not a child."
Yeah, you know?
She kind of.
She was good. She was good. So now I'm wondering, now who are they going to bring in? You know.
Well, they got to bring Grandma back.
Well, Grandma disappeared. Grandma went back to Russia, didn't she?
That's what I thought.
Oh, well, they can bring in somebody else.
And can we speak about Russia for a second?
Okay, let's talk about Russia because that was a good
Sevastopol or Sevastopol, whatever it is, where.
Anton Vasily
is, well, he's
getting it on.
That's not a bad gig. I mean, you go back to Mother Russia and you got the hot blonde in the bed.
It's whatever he wants to get back into the groove, man. They need him to get going, man. You know?
Yeah, not bad.
Well, he's stuck in some station in the middle of Siberia, I would say. So, you know,
I thought it was funny how later on when he's at his workplace and Vasily comes in and gives him a hard time and he says, it's nice to see you adapting and you're eating now and blah 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 and he says, okay, well here's what I need. I need this and I need Echo. Well, what's Echo? Where'd you learn about Echo? On the ARPANET. It's like, I read about it on the internet.
Yeah. He's like, I'm figuring all this stuff out. You want me to work, let me work. And it's like he's, Vasily, the only thing that's gonna keep him alive is the work. That's the only thing that'll keep him alive. And I guess the women will keep him alive too, or keep him interested, awake. Yeah, that was in it. What they figured out was that that this material to do stealth stuff is a paint, right?
Yep.
And so they send they're going to go try and find that paint by this guy named John Skeevers, who's played by yet another Homicide: Life on the Street veteran.
Yep.
Whose name I cannot for the life of me pronounce. I'm sorry. He's got the. Can you say his name?
It's he's
an Emmy winner.
Slovenian.
Too. Yeah. Is he Slovenian? It's Zeljko. Is that right? Ivanek.
Zeljko
Ivanek, who is one of those great character actors that whenever you see him, you're like, oh, I know him. He won an Emmy for Damages. I don't know if you watched the first season.
Oh yeah.
First season of Damages. He won.
It was awesome.
First season was fantastic, and he was great at it. He was so good at it. He was deserving of that Emmy. But he has a small role, and Philip, in another disguise, befriends him and learns about the paint.
Yep. So it's this paint with all these little metal like ball bearings, like Fletch says. It's all ball bearings
these days, guys.
So Zeljko's character is kind of, well, he has cancer. He's got brain cancer.
He's dying.
He's blaming it on the basically when he worked for Lockheed. So when Lockheed created the SR-71 Blackbird, which is a very famous reconnaissance plane. The name of the laboratory where they built it was called the Skunk Works, and that's where they did all this like cool stuff.
This is all coming off the top of your head, right?
Yes, it is actually.
Because Jeff didn't make notes today.
No, I didn't. There are no notes.
I am. I'm flying solo too, man. No notes here.
So,
but no notes, Malthus. That's my new name.
but when Philip comes over to Zeljko's apartment and he's just rambling. He talks about same thing that, I got poisoned and that's what killed the bats. And you're like, what are you talking about? And it was basically the vapors off of the paint killed all the bats that they were using.
Yeah. Well, that was, that was a nice little diversion of the episode to keep the stealth stuff going. But really, the stuff that we really need to talk about is Nina is about to get in big trouble.
Yep.
Arkady reveals to Oleg that Nina was charged with treason. And Oleg, I'm not sure, how does he respond? What did you think of that? At first, I think he was shocked, but then he tells her she needs to run.
Yeah, he's, the thing is that he's just, I think he knows, because of his station, because of his pedigree, he knows how things work.
Right.
So, and he genuinely cares for her. I mean, he's not just there for the action. He genuinely cares for her. And I think that he can kind of see the writing on the wall, and he knows how this is going to turn out. So that's why he's advising her. And Oleg does, Arkady doesn't take any great pride in knowing that this fate, is hanging over her head either. So
no, I think they both actually really care about her a lot. And I think, but Oleg, they both care about her. I mean, we've seen that with Arkady before. He's gone out of his way to warn her about hanging out with Oleg, and he's gone out of his way to, to do little side comments before they could gain Oleg's trust. And obviously, we know Oleg cares about her. I think his feelings are sincere. I don't think that he's out to manipulate her or anything. So that, to me, they both want what's best for her. And of course, they know what's best for her is to get them to turn Stan. So it's setting up the last, obviously next week, we saw previews for next week, which show that Stan walks into the house and is like, what's this all about? And there's Oleg saying, or not Oleg, but Arkady saying, do you know who I am? It's nice to see Arkady getting in on the action now, instead of just sitting in the official building.
Well, all this stuff is just it's interesting to see it all start to coil up and get really tight. Larrick is basically, he's just going methodically. He's just going to go one at a time, and I hope that they don't have him do something stupid. I hope that that they continue to play him
like
a chess player. It's like, that he's thinking all these moves and that he doesn't get overcome by emotion and then trip himself up.
Yeah. I don't think it'll happen.
All right, then.
I'm sorry. I just don't think it will happen, Jeff. We see Larrick basically torture Kate, and Kate holds her own. Well, until he breaks her neck. Right. Did she spit in his face? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Yes. Why do that? What does that do?
Because you know your end is coming. Might as well get a shot in.
Yeah. At least get a good loogie. Pull up some phlegm. Poor Kate.
It always makes you laugh though when someone puts a tie around your mouth.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's still going to keep you quiet?
Well, I mean, he's like, can't you just use your, I'd be like, doing this thing.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a little example. I'm going to put a napkin in my mouth. That's what I'd sound like with a thing in my mouth.
Yeah, you could still make noise.
Yeah, I mean, unless she's just so tired from him beating her.
Well, she was basically like standing on her toes, too, as she's tied to the chandelier.
Yeah, yeah. And I like that she, it's just too bad. I liked her character. Let's all have a moment of silence for Kate. Okay.
All right. Wow. We just did two episodes of like 45
Wait,
minutes.
Wait, no, there was one other thing. Well, actually, I think we did. Wait, John Carroll Lynch was in this episode? Oh, they met with Fred, didn't they? What did Fred have to do with this episode? I don't even remember.
He basically said he...
Oh, it was the paint thing. He was the guy saying, it's the paint. Go see this guy.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, we've covered most of this episode. It was very fast. Very good.
Yeah, I think Phil's Phillip's his beard disguise and long hair. I think that counts. That should get a character credit.
that was a good one. This episode was better than last week's. I just was like a little disappointed with. It just kind of this one at least felt like we were going somewhere. We are going to the end, and we're setting up the last two episodes, which are coming up this week.
Right. And the question is why did Kate leave that? So Kate meets with Jared. She leaves the code, and they decipher the code, and it says get Jared out.
I think that
because she found out about the FBI.
Well, she found out about the FBI, but if Larrick, maybe, well, Maybe she realizes that it's Larrick in her house. Hey, Larrick is a danger man. They keep talking about how dangerous Larrick was. She right. kept saying, you know, it's interesting because she kept saying, there's that one time she said to Philip, she's like, Larrick is a dangerous man and we're sorry that you have to deal with him. Maybe there's a connection that we don't know about. We haven't. Maybe she had to deal with him before. I don't know. She didn't because he sure took her out.
That'd be too contrived.
Too contrived, right. But yeah, something I get the feeling from this week's episode, or at least from the previews, that Larrick is going to go after the boy. I mean, that's all I can figure out. Now, he found something in her house, didn't he?
Yeah, he found her her little receiver and the codes. Yeah, in the code book.
So what does that mean?
It means he just was able to decipher some of the messages that she had. But what messages did she have that he was deciphering?
But he still doesn't know who Philip and Elizabeth are. So
no.
And now it makes me wonder, do we think that Larrick, did Larrick kill the other two? Was he actually the killer? Has he been lying this whole time?
So Larrick's the one who killed Leanne and
Emmett. That's so terrible. This is why we don't get paid to do this. Do you think he actually did? He was the killer?
I don't know. Now that you think of it, now that you mention it, that see, here's, must be.
He said he wasn't. He said he didn't want to kill them.
Yeah.
So
if that's the case, then who did kill them?
Well, maybe Kate knew something about their death. And that's why she said to get the boy out. And she didn't know who Larrick, does she know who Larrick is? Maybe she wrote that, because she wrote that message before she saw it was Larrick, right?
Right.
Maybe I'm just really going off on it. But maybe she thought that the people in her apartment were the same people that killed Leanne and Emmett. So she wrote that they must be coming after the boy, too. So you got to get the boy, because she's a Russian. She doesn't know it's Larrick yet. She wrote that message before she was caught.
Gotcha.
Now, of course, nobody would know that.
Right.
But that would explain perhaps that why she had a relationship with the boy, because she was watching over him. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Kate was a pretty 20-something-year-old woman. I'm sure he was like, he didn't care. Like, hey, redhead likes me. I'm awesome. My parents are dead, but I got this redhead talking to me all the time. Woo. All right. Well, I think we need to wrap it up. Our hour is coming to an end, Jeff.
It is. It went fast.
And our time on this podcast is drawing to a close as well. We only have two more episodes.
Two more episodes, and that's the end of season two.
Wow. 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 Okay. Do we have any random crew members, Jeff?
We do.
Excellent. Let's get on to that. It's the random crew members of the week. It's the random crew members of who we speak. It's the random crew members. You're going to love what we have to say. It's the random crew members, not of the day, of the week.
Well done. Well done.
Thank you. Do we have six or just three?
I was just going to do three.
Of course, I would say do three. I mean, obviously the three that we would have gotten to last week, it's like a game show. It's like I'm being on the Tonight Show. I'm sorry you didn't. We ran out of time. Please come back another day.
Right.
Sorry you didn't have time for that musical group because we were too busy talking to Jimmy Stewart. Do you remember? Yeah,
you haven't had music in a couple episodes to talk about.
There hasn't been any real good music yet. Well, I mean,
there was a song last week, though. There was a song last week. Did you pick it up? I didn't. I wrote the lyrics down.
There was a song last
week. I can't find my way, but it must be done. Those were the lyrics I wrote down.
That had to be period, though. I'm going to look it up while you tell us the random people.
All right, so our first one is an editor on the show, Daniel Valverde, who hails from Brooklyn, New York. His favorite colors are black and – no. He does have from New York, though. He's from Brooklyn. Actually, he's our damages connection along with Zelko.
Hold on 1 second. I think I found this song.
Enlighten us.
That song, It Must Be Done, was a new song written by Pete Townsend.
Really?
Yes. I'm reading it in Rolling Stone right now. The new Pete Townsend song, It Must Be Done, will premiere in the episode of The American that airs on April 30th, which would have been this episode we're talking about. Pete wrote the song with Nathan Barr, who has composed music for
movies. Oh, yeah. I should read the articles I actually post on Facebook. because I put that on there. I said, how cool was it that Nathan Barr was,
hanging out with Pete Townsend.
It's all coming back to me now. All right.
Well, there he goes. That's who wrote the song. Way to go, Pete. Pete must have loved the way Rough Boys was used in season one.
Yeah.
Rough Boys, talking about it again, and it's not in this season. That's right. Going on.
I love how you have an editor. I love how you have no regard for copyright infringement anymore. Well, you're just full on singing. All right, so anyway, Daniel Valverde. He did the Americans, Royal Pains, Damages.
We'll see if I'm back for next season.
All the way back to Picket Fences.
Oh, I loved Picket Fences. Did you?
And an episode of Beverly Hills 90210.
Did you like Picket Fences? My wife and I had the music from Picket Fences played at our wedding.
I did not watch it.
Wow, you're missing out, man. Good show. It was David E. Kelly's first big hit. It was eccentric and cuckoo, crazy, and fun. And, moving on. Sorry, I'll stop.
All right.
Picket Fences.
So we have Alan Queso.
Alan Queso? No kidding.
Director of photography.
Nice. All right. I have no idea who that is. Tell us more about Alan Queso.
He's done work on Hawaii Five-0.
Excellent.
The Nine Lives of Chloe King.
That was an ABC Family show.
Okay.
You don't remember that? ABC Family show? It lasted exactly 13 episodes.
Oh, okay. No, I don't know that.
2 years ago. Or more. What else has he done? Alan Queso.
Tell Me You Love Me, 6 Feet Under.
6 Feet Under, awesome show.
Yep. Big Love.
Lie to Me,
Trauma. Dexter.
Dexter, wow, he's doing all the big shows. Good for him. All
right. And our
he needs our encouragement.
I know,
good
right?
for yeah. you, buddy. You're doing great. Shut up, you comrades podcasters. Next, Jeff.
All right, Alicia Haverland.
Alicia.
On-set dresser.
Nice. We've got, I like this season. We're covering a lot of the on-set people, like the dressers and the prop people and stuff like that.
So she's done work on Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Wow.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Wow. That's it?
Yes.
Wow, she's done a lot of work. And the Americans.
Yeah. Hold on a second. She's got a lot of stuff. She has makeup department actress credit on Alien Abduction.
Ooh, really?
What two makeup? Stunts. The Gold Retrievers and Montana Amazon. Yeah, she's got a few credits.
Wow.
Oh, she's going to be property master on Badass 3.
No,
she did the following. She did props.
I just wanted to say, I didn't know there was a Badass 1 until I saw that there's a Badass 2. And I was like, what? What the heck? Where are these movies coming from? And now there's a third one? Can you explain that to me, Jeff? No, you can't. Okay.
No, because I always get this one mixed up with Kick-Ass.
Yes. Now, this is the one with Danny Trejo, I believe.
Yes. Danny Trejo, Danny Glover, Lonnie Love.
Lonnie Love? I don't know what that is.
Oh, she's a regular comedian on Chelsea Handler.
I never remember. But that show's got canceled, or she quit. Can they carry it on without her?
I don't think so. It wouldn't be Chelsea anymore.
Well, they could call it Chelsea Without Chelsea.
That would be funny. It's Chelsea Without Chelsea.
Now she's doing a Netflix show, Chelsea is.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how that's going to work. That would be interesting if Netflix could pull something like that off, like a weekly show. I would be interested to see if Netflix can venture off into that territory, like doing that John Oliver show or the Bill Maher show. Did you watch that John Oliver show? I've seen that show.
Yeah.
I watched that last night. It's basically The Daily Show.
It is.
It's 100% The Daily Show. Okay. Well, I think that this wraps it up. I've got to get back to work. It's about 1:30 here on the West Coast. It's 1:30 here on the West Coast, and we've got a rocket set of tunes coming to you. Next up is Jeff Marsick singing that great song from the Greg Kim Band.
I'm trying to remember one.
It's Jeopardy. Our love's in Jeopardy. I had the chorus for the breakup song. You remember the breakup song?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's in my head. I'm like, the song's not It's like, what's the name of that song? And then I froze. I'm like, I'll go with Jeopardy, which is the other song that he was famous for. Oh, dear.
It's a Monday.
It's a Monday, and we apologize for it. It's been 2 long weeks. That's what I say. We had the CF walk 2 weeks ago, and that was crazy, and that was a great turnout. And this was Mother's Day yesterday, and I took a Tylenol PM on Saturday night, which I think I'm still recovering from. Well, it was actually, it wasn't a real Tylenol PM. It was like the Walt Sam's Club version of Tylenol PM. It's called acetaminophen PM, I think is what it's called. And have you ever taken that? Oh my God, that stuff just knocks me out. It's like, I don't understand people that...
Well, it's funny because we were supposed to podcast. We had said we were going to podcast like Saturday night, which typically means midnight my time on the East Coast. And I fell asleep. I totally forgot about it. I fell asleep, and then I woke up the next morning. I was like, "Oh man, I was supposed to podcast." And I pick up my phone. I'm looking to see there's probably like 50 text messages from Scott saying, "Are you there? Are you there? Are you there?"
Nah,
nothing.
Nothing.
So
this Scott week I was like, forgot this week too. At about 9 o'clock, I was like, "Oh yeah." We're supposed to podcast. Well, Jeff hasn't called me, so I'm assuming he's asleep. And then I was like, well, we're not doing it tomorrow unless we do it really late because it's Mother's Day. So
but we try to get it in for you, our four loyal listeners.
Hey, now. We've had 3,000 downloads. So that means
that's actually true.
We had a few people listening to us, and we want to thank you, all of you. Our lovely listeners.
That's it. All right.
Okay. It's time for my afternoon coffee. I'm going to let it, I'm going to wrap things up by saying that Scott Malkus is an employee of the Cartoon Network Studios and the Turner Broadcasting System. And the opinions expressed here are his own and do not reflect those of the parent company. I think that's the right thing to say, right, Jeff?
That sounded pretty close.
Awesome. Oh, and hey, next week I start publishing my book, a serial novel I'm publishing on popdose.com. It starts a week from today. It starts on Monday the 19th. So if you are interested in reading a summer-long, it's a YA book. It's a teenage book. It takes place in the 80s, but see, our podcast is the Comrades Show, and it's all about the 80s, right, Jeff?
That's right. That's right.
Like how I tied that all together? And we're 80s children, huh? 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 Huh?
Oh. I love the 80s.
I do, too.
So we, but yours is like a multimedia experience.
Mine is
right?
Multimedia experience. Mine will have original artwork from. I have original artwork that I can't say I commissioned, but I approached people because I couldn't pay anybody. But I did get original art for each chapter. I sent artists a chapter. They read the chapter, and I told them to just do whatever jumps out at them. And so far, the artwork has been is surprising. It's just like, and it's kind of exciting to me to figure out what image is going to come to me. And then there's going to be music attached to it as well. So that's kind of I've started to explain it on Basement Songs, the book, .blogspot.com. I've also set up a legendary The Novel Tumblr page if you want to do a search for that. But it's pretty fun. And, so it's going to be a chapter every other day, Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, except for the two holiday weeks during the summer, which there'll only be two chapters those weeks. And it'll run from next week until probably the second week in August. And anybody who grew up in the 80s, especially the mid to late 80s, like Jeff and I did, you'll hopefully get a kick out of it. If you were born after that, if you're listening and you're a 90s child or you're a millennial, thank you for listening, first of all, because I can't believe you're listening to two old men ramble on about the Comrades Show. Oh, no, it's called The Americans. The Comrades is the podcast. See how old I am? I'm sorry. And but hopefully you'll be able to see something of yourself or maybe your parents or your kids or whatever in this. And it's just a fun little thing. It's kind of like a bit inspired by Dazed and Confused in American Graffiti. And I'll stop rambling now, Jeff. You can interrupt me at any time instead of just sitting there looking at me. Jeff is sitting at, we're on Skype, and he's just looking at me going, he's not going to stop, is he? He's just going to keep talking.
I just sit here and just look at Scott and just go, wow. And this isn't even with Adderall.
And on that note, I think that we'll wrap it up. Rob will be like saying, thank God they just, thank God they only do 1 hour. We've actually done better. Some of them were 2 hours, weren't they?
Yeah.
Now
we just like to listen to the sound of our own voice. The other plug is I want to throw in real quick is go over to southgatemediagroup.com.
Yes,
they've got a Game of Thrones podcast, which is really good. I just recorded a new Biters, which is Walking Dead. Kirk Manley and I, we talked about Stephen King's novel, The Cell or Cell. And we talked about a couple movies as well on there. So we're talking about zombies and stuff.
Did you talk about Walking Dead?
While Walking Dead's on hiatus,
I just threw him for a loop.
Yeah,
he's like, "What did he just say?" I think a little salt and pepper. I was just throwing that in there.
I think I need to get my coffee too.
Okay, I apologize. I'll be much better next time. Next time, let's do Saturday morning. I like doing Saturday mornings, Jeff.
I do too, except that. Yeah. Kids and responsibilities.
Oh, well, then we'll figure it out. Anyway, thank you for listening. Right. We really appreciate it, and we will talk to you next week. Adios.
All right. See ya.
If you would like to donate to help pay for this and other Southgate Media Group podcasts, simply go to our website, southgatemediagroup.com, and click on the donate button. It can be as little as a dollar or, well, as much as you want. Help keep this fun going by supporting this and our other shows. Thanks again for listening, everyone. You're the best fans in the world.